Well, welcome to the study for today. There's going to be some interesting things, I think, today. But let's begin once again with our, now that I remember, our daily scripture. I've been so busy with things, different things, today even more so than yesterday. And where are we in this now? We are at, yes, 19, I think. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 19. But before I start, I want to double check. I want to make sure that's correct. Yes, it is. Yet who is there knowing, the wise or the fool? Such one will control all my labor or school. Wherein I have shown myself wise under fire, yet all comes to vanity, once again dire. That's from Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 19. In the translation from 2020 of yours truly. And that, little children, is our scripture for today. I can't even believe the exciting things that we're about to look at now. That I thought this was a short paragraph, but all of the links here, except for maybe this one, that one did not work, yeah. But all the other links here actually worked. And one of them is Bill Fry's website, which produced this video, which is the second link. The videos are downloadable, and they don't play normally without downloading. So here's the downloaded video that I downloaded. Yeah, by the way, this is the second video on the list on Bill Fry's website. So right here on Bill Fry's website, it's the second one, called Day One to Noah's Ark. Let's make it bigger. Day One to Noah's Ark National Park and Darupanar Site. That's what the second video is. But every one of them, I believe, is downloadable. They seem to be. And there are pictures you can click on to enlarge the pictures. Nuhun Gemisi is to do with Noah. I think it's Noah's Ark, that means. That Nuhun Gemisi in Turkish. I think that's what it means. But 5 kilometers or whatever unit they're using in Turkey, that sign says Nuhun Gemisi. Let's translate. I want to translate. Let's get Google Translate. Detect language. Nuhun Gemisi. Nuhun Gemisi. Noah's Ark. That's what it means in, evidently, yeah, Turkish. It's in Turkish. So let's watch now. This is the tour, the first day of the tour that the late Bill Fry's website provided. Actually, we can't watch this because it's all of it. We can't watch because it's 20 minutes long. So let's jump in. I'm watching this.
Can you take a picture of me?
This is not going to work. This is a reverse video, right? So unless I can reverse that later, it doesn't work right now. I always reverse my video twice after I'm done, so it's not going to come out right. That photo should come out right, but anyway, it doesn't matter. That's just one of the resources, and you won't see it reversed if you go there and click on that link. So, or if you click on any of the links on that website, there's a good possibility they all work. But that's from Bill Fry's website called 2002 Tour to Noah's Ark, which is this one. Okay, so it's got pictures. Look at this. It looks like it's the visitor center for the national park. Yeah, there it is. National Park, Noah's Ark National Park Visitor Center. And that's a building that was constructed quite near to Noah's Ark itself, to the relic of Noah's Ark. So the interesting thing, I was talking about this the other day, is that the Ark was underground, right? Mostly underground, until the earthquake that caused the revealing of the sides of it, the ribs on the side, which was a very fortuitous earthquake that Ron Wyatt prayed for. He prayed for there to be a revealing, and he prayed for an actual earthquake, according to what he said. And that is what happened, and the Ark became more visible because of this earthquake. And so that was one of the most amazing, or one of the amazing things. There's so many amazing things about Noah's Ark, but that's one of the amazing things. And then we've got, that was our map from yesterday. This is another, this is a YouTube video, isn't it? Yeah. From ArkDiscovery.com. And ArkDiscovery.com is right here. It's hosted by Kevin Fisher, it says there, who knew Ron Wyatt. And he's got a lot of nice information there. That's ArkDiscovery.com. But look at this video now that he's got right here. How long is it? Beautiful. Called Revealing God's Treasure. Revealing God's Treasure, Noah's Ark Found. That was one of the pillars that was found on the opposite side of the Red Sea, the eastern arm of the Red Sea. On one side of it, there was this pillar that had been erected by King Solomon. It was remarkable that it was put there, evidently to commemorate the Red Sea crossing. So there's some evidence, quite substantial evidence, that Ron Wyatt's discovery of the Red Sea crossing was the right place. And it was in the opposite place, on the opposite arm of the Red Sea from the one that we were looking at on the west side. But so that would mean that the Egyptians and Israelites were on the opposite side of the Sinai Peninsula when that whole thing happened, when Israel was saved and Egypt was annihilated at the Red Sea crossing. These are some of the things they saw in the water, right? The previous frame there. They saw chariot wheels that were encrusted with coral and things. Thank you. called Nueva Beach. That's right, the crossing at the Gulf of Aqaba, which was the eastern arm of the Red Sea on the eastern side of the Sinai Peninsula, right? Which is, in ancient times, that was probably part of Egypt. Or, you know, very, very much of interest, right, to the Egyptians. I want to skip ahead because I don't want to watch all the introduction. We don't have time. We've already used 10 minutes, so... Okay, good. I stopped it in time. That's an ad, so I've muted our system now, so I can simply bypass this ad here.
Before the Great Flood, the world had become filled with wicked men, so much so that the Lord decided to destroy the face of the earth. And God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will just..."
That's a very beautiful, it's a beautiful video. Like, it's got a lot of information. If you look here, I think it even, but it's got the scenery from Turkey. There's got Noah's Ark. Is this going to be in reverse? There it is. That's the opening of the National Park, I think. That scene. And it's got a lot of some interviews there. They're very, very fat. That's Mr. Baumgartner when he was younger, I think. John Baumgartner, who did some of the important measurements. That might be David Fassold, actually, right there. I'm not sure who that is, actually, for sure. They used a lot of different equipment to measure. They used underground radar, but they also used resistivity measurements, electrical resistivity of the ground, and anything metal will have a much lower resistivity, and wood, of course, would be higher resistivity. But anyway, they were able to, using these resistivity measurements, map out the shape of the underground parts of the Ark. That's why that was so important. Tom Fenner was a geologist who worked with them. There's even a map here. Where is it? Why can't I click on that? Something has gone wrong. Let's see. Something strange. What happened? There. Yeah, there it is. That was very bizarre. I couldn't click on the timeline. Okay. But there we have it. There's some ground penetrating radar scans that helped them. That's the results of some of that work from 1985 to 87. Now, I'm not sure exactly when Ron Wyatt passed. Actually, he may have already passed by that time. I don't recall his date of passing. Look at this. This is the analysis of something. What was it? Noah's Ark sample, the wood, I guess. This is from the wood, I guess. They analyzed the wood that was petrified. That's what I think this is. There's so many different things in this movie. And now I'm having trouble. There's a beautiful scenery showing the Ark in the front here, the middle foreground, and Mount Judy in the background with the beautiful cliff, the wall of heaven, in the background there, in the center. Beautiful towering cliff. That's a remarkable... I want to come back to this and maybe watch some of this once we've finished with our other video that we've been watching. But let's get on with our... We got so many things now we could watch in terms of videos. But I want to continue our video study of Thor Heyerdahl's expedition. We were at part 3 yesterday. That means we've done 15 minutes, I guess. So we're at minute number 20. That's what I'm thinking we are. Let's see if that's right here. Three? No, we're at minute 15 if we've done three parts. Three parts is minute 15. Right.
Boats on the very spot where the Phoenicians founded the city nearly 3,000 years ago. The Atlantic Ocean stretches between South America and this point in Africa, where the ruins of megalithic structures built with familiar techniques are found. These, too, were oriented to the sun. They were built not quite 3,000 years ago, at the same time as civilization began on the facing coast of America. Reed boats and pyramids first appeared in the Old World, then suddenly in America, and then in Polynesia. Could the sea have carried sailors on a one-way voyage westward long before Columbus? The ocean currents circulate on a fixed course. One of them, the one that will carry Ra, moving from North Africa to tropical America and meeting land in the Gulf of Mexico. Precisely where water meets land in the Gulf of Mexico, where ancient reed boats might have washed ashore, America's oldest sculptures with marked Negroid features stare at us from the past. Just as remarkable as these are other legacies of the mysterious Olmec civilization. Carvings of bearded heads with Semitic features which cannot be of native Indians who were beardless. Indeed, the Indians had legends of bearded white men who sailed from the East many, many generations ago. How had they traveled? Certainly not in balsa boats, for there is no balsa in the Mediterranean. And therefore, the voyage of Contiki, which had proven so much about travel from the Americas, had no bearing upon the solution to this puzzle. Could the Olmecs have sailed in reed boats? Heyerdahl decided that there was only one way to find out, to build such a boat and set sail himself. So he journeyed to Chad in Central Africa, where the ancient art of making boats of reeds still flourishes.
In the Republic of Chad lies the little desert village of Bole on the southernmost border of the Sahara. No road leads here to Bole, only caravan tracks through the desert. Here, the Aboriginal culture has remained unchanged for thousands of years, and it would live on independent if our own entire civilization were to be destroyed. I came to Bole because here the papyrus boat of ancient times was still in use, and I had something to learn from the experienced boat builders of the Buduma tribe. Here I met Omar and Abdullah for the first time.
The village of Bole lies on Lake Chad, a large inland sea. Here the Buduma people live on floating islands of vegetation. After they have been to market in Bole, they swim home with their shopping on reed bundles. While other tribes make dugout canoes of tree trunks, the Buduma continue to use their forefathers' boats, made from bound together papyrus, a reed which grows abundantly around the lake shores. The Buduma are pleased to show Heyerdahl how they build their craft. They begin at the bow end, using a single reed split into four parts. They insert other reeds into the middle and bind the ends together with rope. They fatten the bough by constantly inserting new reeds. Fibers scraped clean from palm leaves are braided into durable ropes. Gradually, the bundle thickens and begins to look like a boat. Its bow.
Okay, I think we'll stop there. That's our 5-minute stopping point. And we've still got some more time, but there's so many things I could talk about today because I've been busy. I made my first ever leather belt today. And then I made my first ever leather dye today using black hull powder, boiling it, and then cooling it down and soaking the leather in it. So, yeah, I can even show you the belt probably. Let me just see. There, so that doesn't hang too loose, and I won't trip on it. This is the leather belt. This is the leather belt that I made. This is my first ever leather belt that I made. But it was much lighter in color. It was a very, very, very light tan color. And now it's much darker. Well, it's not really dark yet, but it's a much more, reasonable color, I think. I think that the light color is just too light to be used for much. It doesn't go with a lot of different clothing if you have a very light belt. And the dyeing process didn't actually seem to work right in this region. But that's going to be covered when the belt is brought around like this. And when it's put together like that. I haven't yet made the belt loop, but when the belt's put together like this, then that area under there is hidden by this. So, yeah, it's quite acceptable, I think, as a leather belt. Maybe as a first attempt, it's even better than I might have hoped for. I don't know. But it was just a matter of cutting it to the correct width and cutting it with a straight edge and using the Chicago bolts. Chicago bolts, which screw together. And they have to be the right exact thickness or, length for those bolts. And so I bought an assortment of them. So for this thickness of leather, that was the thickness of bolt needed. I had to cut the hole for the buckle to be able to protrude through there and then be able to just to be able to move around a little bit, pivot. So that was an extended length hole that I cut in the leather before or while I was assembling it. Yeah, the belt, that is, while I was assembling the belt. The leather was from one large piece of leather that I cut down the middle. I cut it in half, first of all, because that was the longest part. To get the long piece that I needed for the belt, I cut the large piece in two large pieces. Then I cut the width of the belt that I wanted, which is one and a quarter, which is just right for the buckle that I happen to buy. I bought an assortment of buckles. So I have all different sizes of these buckles, and I have brass color, and I also have this gun black color. So I use the gun black color for this. I also have the Chicago bolts in two different colors. But I just found it's not something that is like when the first time you ever make something, it's not a lot of fun, because I'm very aware of the fact I don't want to fail. So I don't want to cut myself with a very sharp knife, etc. I'll be right back. Okay. So, the use of that black hole powder to dye the leather is a very, very, very nice thing. Because it's natural, and I happen to have black hole powder that I use for my foot powder. And so, I wasn't showing that in a large image, was I? Let me get that again. I wasn't showing a large enough image of it. Let me show that, yeah. But also, I would like to show you the other pieces of leather, but they're in the closet in the other room. They're a long distance away. Let's make this much larger. What was I thinking? I forgot that you can't see it. Okay, so right here. I mean, this is just entirely homemade. Now, the staining didn't take there, but I put mink oil on the back here. That's why that staining didn't work. I put the mink oil on there to test to see how dark it would become with mink oil. I'm not sure why this staining didn't work, but maybe I can still darken that with stain, or maybe, you know, the next time I do my staining. But it doesn't matter because that's never exposed anyway. It's always going to be covered up by your belt. So, you know, you put the belt through here and, then you... I made it myself, I don't have the belt loop yet. The belt loop will go through the middle between the two bolts. But you see how the belt covers up that spot. But this is handmade by yours truly. And this is the belt loop piece that I'm intending to make into a belt loop once I get the staple for it. It can be stapled end on the end. And that will then be put around this whole thing. You know, it will essentially look like that to hold it. But the staple will be hidden on the inside in between the two pieces of leather, which are held together, let me disassemble, by this Chicago bolt system, or the two Chicago bolts. In between will be this piece of leather will slip through. This will slip right through. Now, this could be joined together by other means, I was thinking too. That it could be made longer and then doubled over and glued or something, or fastened together with a Chicago bolt through the middle, but then this belt would be really much thicker here where this loop is put. But there are many other ways, of course, to do it. To do this, it could be stitched together at the end of it, this loop. But you might, depending on how you do it, you might have to disassemble the belt and then slip the loop over. And then, you know, retighten the Chicago bolts, which have the screw heads on the inside, so you don't see the screw heads. They're two-piece bolts, right? One screws into the other. And that's how you make rivets for a belt. That's one way. You could use normal pop rivets or some other type of rivets, I suppose, right? But I bought these buckles, too. Got lots of buckles. They were so inexpensive. They come from China, I'm pretty sure. And they're very inexpensive. I could buy some more expensive belt buckles, you know, in the future. I can buy more and different once I get better at making belts. Maybe I don't know how many belts I really want to make anyway. I don't know that I want to make any significant number of belts. I just want to make them for myself right now, and that's that. I only need so many. I don't need very many. But that was one thing I did today. But I also got some other things. I got a new water bottle today, which is a giant-sized water bottle. I got five gallons, which is the biggest bottle I have now. Just one of the standard plastic bottles that's sort of food safe, you know, hopefully. And I got something very, very new, which is a hydrogen water bottle. That I can even show you, but we're out of time very soon, so I'll just have to bring that over. And oh my goodness, what else did I do today? I did other things. I did other things today.
You sure? Well, the water bottle, it just charged. It just finished charging. This is the water bottle.
This is the water bottle. Just finished charging now. But I've used it already. And it, you fill it with water. It's got 210 mils? Yeah, 200. It's 7 ounces of water that it holds. And you press the button twice if you want 10 minutes of hydrogen production, once for 5 minutes, and then it produces hydrogen with bubbles in the water and multicolors just for display, I guess, but it's beautiful. And then you drink it. So I've only had one drink of this. I've drunk once 7 ounces one time after I did the first batch, which you just throw out. But this is made by a group of Australian people, a trio of Australians who make this. And it's one of the better rated ones on one of the independent reviews I saw. So it's really, but it's not cheap either. It's about $100 and some, but it's meant to last. It's sort of food safe plastic material. It's not glass. And it's got this charge, it's rechargeable. So, and it's, you know, there are people rave about hydrogen water. So I finally realized, yeah, I mean, among all the other top selling products on Amazon, right? Hydrogen water is the top selling product in the area of water, I think, is what I'm thinking of, or water. I think it obviously wouldn't be the top selling of all products, I don't think. But in the area of water water processing, water, you know, water purifying and that sort of thing, this is one of the top products, or the top product, I think. Well, not this particular one, because people don't want to spend that much money. But this is over $100, about $150 maybe. For this, or 120, or I forget, but it's Canadian dollars. But this is one of the very best ones you can get. So I thought I might as well buy something good quality. But I don't know. I've only used it once. So is it good? Does it work? Is my health better? Maybe it is already. I've been working really hard today, building things, making new belt for the first time, and in that sense, building, doing all sorts of things. So maybe, and now I recovered quickly after that water, maybe it did do something good. I don't know, but I think I'll be looking into it more. That's it for today. I think it's September 17th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 19:39 hours. North American, Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much, and thank you for listening and watching. And on my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now. And that was Chapter 2, Paragraph 3 of The Ark of Urartu, which had some videos which you're invited to watch.